Well, the Colorado Avalanche are the Stanley Cup champions. And Sean, welcome back from the road. The right team won. They were the better team. I had them winning in six. I don't know where you had them. They won in six. And to be honest, I mean, they were the best team throughout the playoffs, 16-4. The right team won this thing.
And good to see you again. It's been a while. You had them in six, but what pick was that? Was that like the third iteration of your picks, fourth iteration?
I had the Colorado Avalanche winning the Stanley Cup when we did our preseason picks. Now, I'm not going to tell you who I had them beating, but I had them winning the Stanley Cup.
Okay, well, good enough. Yeah, no, the right team won, but I think there was a showing of the heart of a champion in the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't know that the talent disparity would allow it to be six games. And not only the talent disparity, but the injury disparity, right? Both teams were hurt, but as we're doing this right now, Tampa Bay is doing their breakup day. And I think the injury list is going to be nauseating. They were crippled. It's unbelievable what they played through. So three seasons of going deep into the summer, I think finally came home to roost against a team that was faster, younger, speedier in thought, and probably more skilled.
Yeah, and I think it was John Cooper who said after that if this was the regular season, they'd be playing half of their American Hockey League team with the injuries that they had. And you, so yeah, the heart of a champion, absolutely. And they're not done. They're still very much in the middle of this. Like, we talk about a dynasty. They didn't win three in a row, but they can still be a dynasty. Like, they if they're not already. And let's bring in our guest, Nick Kotsenik, our columnist with NHL.com. Nick, you cover the whole thing. You agree here, the right team won, and also the Lightning kind of showed that heart of a champion too?
Absolutely. I had Lightning in seven, and my attitude was, I'm not picking against a back-to-back champion that's won 11 straight series until someone proves they can beat them. Well, Colorado did that. I think it's clear, you know, Colorado was clearly the better team. Tampa showed tons of heart. I'm kind of amazed that they got as far as they did with, you know, the attrition, just all the hockey they played, the being behind in series, constantly fighting back, playing hurt. But, you know, Colorado showed a lot of heart too. You look at that photo of Nichushkin's foot. I talked to Andrew Cogliano on the ice and asked him, you know, can we finally know what happened? You know, he broke his middle finger on his right hand in multiple places, had screws inserted, came back less than 3 weeks later. I had a very similar injury, middle finger on my right hand in high school baseball, and was like crying, right? Like crying on painkillers, like missed weeks, like wanted my mommy. And this guy's out there like playing hockey at the highest level and hoisting the cup with a bad hand, right? And Kadri, like go down the list. So incredibly impressive win for the Avalanche, deserving champions. And it's going to be interesting to see whether, as we pivot to the offseason, you know, whether they can come back again like the Lightning, right? Like the Lightning are their model. They've got tons of UFAs. Nate McKinnon says he's getting fat this offseason just in celebrating. Even he says, I don't know if we're going back to back. So starts over again right now.
So he's going to join us.
Well, we're already fat.
Yeah, no, but he's gonna live like us for the summer.
Live like us.
Chicken wings and beer, right? But they do have a ton of UFAs, and you look at them and you're like, wow, I wonder if they can do this again. And a ton of important UFAs that maybe you didn't think were important until the playoffs, like Nichushkin. You were like, you know, he's a nice complimentary piece. He was vital to them. Like, how do you walk away from that now, right? Lekkonen's an RFA. Kadri, I don't know if he comes back, but he was certainly important to them. Kemper, I think they're in a worse place than Tampa was during their back-to-backs. Like, they had to replace a third line each time, but their skill guys were pretty tied up, and they lost some other guys. But it's a pretty impressive list of UFAs, and there's no first or second round pick. There's no immediate help. They're not getting another Cale Makar. It's going to be, look, Joe Sakic was rightly praised for winning the Stanley Cup and what he did, and he was aggressive, and the players that he got paid huge dividends, Manson, Lekkonen, you know, you can go right down the line, but they're in a pickle now.
Yeah, I mean, well, start here. Nathan McKinnon is at 6.3. He's a UFA in a year. So you have to extend him, and you know his salary is probably going to double roughly, right? So that eats into your cap space. Then you have Burakovsky, Cogliano, Helm, Kadri, Nichushkin, Sturm, Manson, Johnson, Jack Johnson, right? And, you know, I'll be curious to see if Eric Johnson comes back or not. He was thinking about retiring before this season, just with all the injuries and everything that he's gone through in his career, and to hoist that cup. I wonder whether he'll make that decision or not. Just pure speculation there. But, I mean, I count second line center, top six winger, key bottom six guys, you know, a top four defenseman. Like, that's some serious pieces from a Stanley Cup champion. So they're not all coming back. So it'll be curious to see how Joe Sakic's able to maneuver.
Yeah, but let's believe in Joe Sakic, right? I mean, this guy has done nothing but make the right moves, right? To just even think about the idea that Philip Grubauer was a Vezina Trophy finalist a year ago with them. And he said, we're not signing him to a long-term deal. He goes to Seattle and he's not the same goalie. Obviously he was in Colorado for obvious reasons. They bring in Kemper and they win the Stanley Cup. And to me,
Kemper's UFA too.
Kemper's a UFA too. Yeah. To me, the biggest part of the offseason here for the Colorado Avalanche, and it might not get done in the offseason, but it's the biggest thought, is the Nathan MacKinnon situation. His next contract is going to dictate what they do here. I mean, they have 1 year at 6.3. Nichushkin's not signing for 1 year. Burakovsky's not signing for 1 year. Kadri's not signing for 1 year. Manson's not signing for 1 year, right? So they have to think of the future of MacKinnon at maybe 12 and a half or 13 million, not 6.3. It's not just next year. Next year that they have him at 6.3 is huge, but not necessarily for this offseason. Maybe it's huge more for the trade deadline next season, when you think about, could they make additions with the cap situation for 1 year like they did this year with Manson and Cogliano? The MacKinnon situation is the biggest thing, but I'm really curious to see how they operate under those guidelines, because it's more of a long-term thing rather than just a short-term thing that they have to think of. But Sean, you're 100% right. They're in a situation, as we look ahead to the offseason for all 32 teams now, they're in a situation with all these UFA guys that is much different than the Lightning were in, and it's going to be much harder for them to repeat, because it cannot be the same team coming back. Well, Tampa Bay almost had the same team coming back. It can't be the same team for Colorado.
No, and I think the one thing I will say is I think both of you might be a little high with your number. Not that it's going to matter, but I could see Nate MacKinnon coming back a little cheaper. Look, he loves Sidney Crosby. He said after the game that he was in whatever floor he was on, he was in room 87, and they knew that they were going to win because he was in 87 and you know, Crosby and all that. They're from the same hometown. Let's not forget, Sid has taken a hometown discount throughout his career. He set the market for star players. Like, you can do one of two things, right? You, as a star player, you can be like, show me the money, or you can be like, Joe, I need to get paid. What number is going to make you comfortable and is going to make me comfortable, and we can go and we can bring my friends back, my teammates, my warriors that helped me win this, and we can be the best team possible. So yes, is he a $13 million, $12 million player on the open market? He most certainly is. Is he a $9.5, $10 million player with the Colorado Avalanche? There's a good chance he is.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, you know, but we're talking a significant raise here. That's probably an entire player. I mean, if I'm Joe Sakic, what I say to him is, look, Mikko Rantanen's our highest paid player at 925. Cale Makar just won the Norris Trophy and the Conn Smythe at 9. Like, can we be in that ballpark, right? But even so, he's getting like a $4 million raise, right? Like, that's a JT Compher, right? Let's say Devon Taves, right? Like, that's a significant piece right there that you have to give up just to fit him, you know, under the cap. So you're right. I mean, we might be overestimating a smidge, but wherever he comes in is going to be a significant chunk out of their cap.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. And I think it's still, even if he is taking a hometown discount, I think it's still part of the, you know, the biggest part of their offseason of consideration, just considering that. Let's look at the Lightning, right? To me, you know, as we look into the offseason and we look at the future, I said it before, I think they're still right there. And people are going to assume now, I think, that, well, they're going to dip, right? They had their run and now it's time to dip. Stamkos is still a heck of a player. He's coming off a huge year. He's what, 31, you know? Victor Hedman's in his early 30s. He's still one of the best defensemen. Andrei Vasilevsky signed long-term, 27 years old. He's the best goalie in the world, right? They've got all these guys signed. The big one is Andre Palat. That's huge. He's a pending UFA right now. And Nick Paul, you know, but they're right there. And I honestly, guys, like, it's a lot of hockey and I get it, but I could see the Lightning right back in this situation a year from now. They're not done. They're right there, still very much in their championship window.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think they're going to be right there, but I am in the club that they might dip. Like, and they know, and John Cooper said it, right? All they care about is getting in the playoffs. So next season, like, I'm not even going to worry about their regular season as long as they're in the playoff hunt and they get in the playoffs. And then it's a matter of how much energy and how healthy are they at playoff time. I mean, as much as I laud them for this year, it shows you the fine line, right? They were a goal or two away from losing in the first round to Toronto, right? Like, they lose in the first round, like, you know, the narrative is different, right? They were really close. So to me, they're still in an incredibly difficult division. Florida is really good and probably learned from the experience this time. Same thing with Toronto. It's going to be fascinating next year where those three teams are at. Again, like, could Tampa come out of that? Yes. But so could the others. And I do think that this has taken a toll. And they could dip next year, but I do think, like you've pointed out, their core is intact. They're in good shape to be contenders for not just next season, but seasons afterward.
I don't know if Palat's the big piece of business. He's huge, but Nick Paul is the guy who, to me, really was a revelation in the playoffs. And you have to decide, you know, was he the player he was in Ottawa, or was he the player he was with you in Tampa Bay in the second half of the season and in the playoffs? If they try and get him done, they're going to have to make another move. You know, they're going to have to move something out at that price, and that'll change things. But other than that, they're solid. And the two things I'll say, you know, you bring up that they could have lost in the first round and they didn't. And it's because they're so mentally strong. They're incredibly mentally strong. And John Cooper really knows the right buttons to push, both in game and long term. And if you don't think on the first day of training camp, he's going to show up and he's going to say, you know what people are saying about us? They're saying we're frauds. They're saying that we won two cups and they weren't regular seasons. Mm-hmm. And that it doesn't count that we got to game six of the Stanley Cup final against arguably the best team in the league. Nobody believes in us. And he'll have those guys running through walls. And Stamkos will be right behind him, and Hedman will be pissed off, and Vasilevsky will be ready to break things every time he loses a game. And they'll just feed off of it.
He will say that, but like, they're not going to sustain that for 82 games. And they know that, right? Like,
they don't have to
get in, right? But like, go back to game seven, Toronto. Okay. Look, and I love this team. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Nick Paul scored two goals in game seven, never scored a playoff goal in his life, right? Like, they got by Toronto and at full marks, right? But that, the only point I'm making is it's a fine line. Right. Like, easily could have lost that game. Right. Like, it's not like Kucherov and Point and Stamkos and Hedman like stepped up and won the game in game seven. They didn't. Like, so depth matters. They got a great piece. Nick Paul came, you know, through at the right time and helped build their legend. Right. They're going to be right there again. I could see them being good, but I could see it going either way. I could see Toronto winning that series next year. I could see Florida winning that series next year. The point is, it's a really fine line, and it's a matter of health and luck and performance at the right time.
So I have a question for you guys, and it is. I don't want to look back too much because we're now looking ahead, but in regards to Tampa Bay and going for that third, if Braden Point was 100%, if Braden Point was healthy, does the series go differently? Nick, what do you think?
Well, sure. I mean, but he wasn't. I mean,
right. But he's signed and he's good. That's my point. Yeah, you know?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, he led them in goals the last two playoff runs. He's he's a great player. So of course, if he's healthy, the series goes differently. But, you know, if Kadri were healthy, the series would go differently. You know, if Nichushkin or Burakovsky hadn't been hurt, it would go differently. I mean, it's just, I don't like to play that game, because that's part of the playoffs, right? It's the attrition. It's who's hurt at what time. So the answer to your question is yes, but he wasn't.
And I don't know. Look, it goes differently. Maybe they don't lose 7-0. Maybe it goes to a game 7. But you take the third period of game 6 and you put that on a loop, and that's the Colorado Avalanche, and that's why they won. Tampa Bay season was on the line. They needed a goal against a mediocre at best goalie, and I don't think I'm being mean in that. You know, if you took the 16 goalies in the tournament, you'd put him somewhere at 8 or 9, and he had given up a bad goal in virtually every game except for game 2. They needed a goal. They got one shot in the first 10 minutes. It was from center ice. They got 4 shots in the entire third period with their season on the line. Colorado skated them into dust, smothered them, just totally frustrated a champion, right? It was like a boxer finishing a fight against the defending champion and just coming on stronger and stronger in the championship rounds. And that's what Colorado did. Second period, third period, they just skated them into the ground. And so is it different? Are the scores different? Is everything different? Of course it is. But I think the final outcome isn't different, because that third period showed you the difference in the two teams when everything was on the line.
Yeah, 100%. And what I loved about that third, like in the morning, Jared Bednar talked about game 5 and he used the word safe, which is not a word that I'd heard him use before. And he thought they'd played safe, you know, and they had gotten to that point by playing on their toes, right? By using their skating, by doing everything that you just described. And so when it was time to clinch, right, and put them away, they didn't sit back on their 2-1 lead. They went and played to win. And I thought that was impressive and a great way for them to finish the job.
All right. So I think people are done hearing about the Avalanche and the Lightning. Let's move on to...
we haven't even got to the parade, Dan.
Nah, that's all right. The parade is on Thursday. We're recording this on Tuesday. Let everybody there enjoy the parade as they should. And look, the team was great and they deserve to win. And their offseason is going to be really interesting. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of questions of can they repeat. And it's different, obviously, from when the Penguins repeated and when the Lightning repeated, because those teams were more intact. But I wanted to touch on the Penguins. They're up right now on NHL.com. I did a story, you know, 10 questions going into the offseason, and the Avalanche were part of that. And another part of that was the Pittsburgh Penguins, which I think, you know, it's incredibly interesting what could happen there with Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang, both pending unrestricted free agents. Malkin's 36 on July 31st. Letang just turned 35 a couple months ago. They have not won a playoff series since 2018, the Pittsburgh Penguins. And now, I mean, that core, the team we know and have known for more than a decade, could be changing. I'm curious your thoughts, guys. I think that if you had to choose between one of these two guys, you choose Letang, because he's the defenseman. He's coming off a big year. And he's a little harder to, I think he's harder to replace. And I also don't think Malkin's the same player coming off of the knee surgery that he had, but they are maybe one of the most interesting teams to watch in the offseason, because the era could be ending right now. And that's going to be fascinating to see.
And maybe it should. And this is an unpopular opinion, but they've had the three of them together. And everybody remembers the good times, and they should, right? But it's been, 5 years now they've lost in the first round?
Yeah.
Right? So that's the hard truth of it. They've lost 5 times in the first round. They're both getting older. They're both going to command a lot of money. You have a president and a GM now who have no long-term ties to those guys. You have an ownership group that has no long-term ties to those guys. I think it's time for a change. I don't disagree with you. I think, you know, probably, you know, if you could keep one, you keep Letang. I think it's interesting that neither is signed. So that tells me that there's a good chance that they're both gone. And I do think on the open market, like an Evgeny Malkin is going to get attention, right? Like, you know, like, so he's probably going to find a better deal elsewhere, and it's probably time for him to go.
Yeah, I mean, look, I find it amazing because I thought that Letang should have been, you know, and I've thought this for years, should be more of a Norris Trophy candidate than he is. He reminds me a lot of Ray Bourque when I was a kid, like in the fact that he's really good and he makes some egregious mistakes. But those mistakes are okay because of what he brings the 90% of the time when he's not turning the puck over in his own end. And Pittsburgh, as things have gone bad, that's been magnified and magnified, and somehow he's become less popular and more vilified and not as important. I don't know how you replace him. I literally don't know how you replace a Chris Letang. Yeah, you let that money walk out the door and you got all this money to spend and you're going to go on the free agent market and you're going to be like,
yep,
where's the seven Chris Letangs that I can go get?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Where are these guys that can eat huge minutes, that can right. make the game go at the pace Sid wants it to go at, that can make the game go at any pace, whatever pace the other team's uncomfortable playing? Chris Letang can do that. He can change games from the back end. He's a better defender than people give him credit for. Like, he's a top 10 defenseman in the league. I don't know if there's a top 10 defenseman in the league or top 30 defenseman in the league. Like, you're not getting a Devin Toews. You're not getting any of those guys unless you're really lucky. And then the other thing is there's nothing coming. Like, you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, and it amazes me. I think they have seven guys on their roster right now that are drafted players. Like, they don't hit in the draft. One of the reasons that they haven't won since they've won is because they haven't been able to replenish the cupboard, right? Like, a couple of guys have come up, Jari's come up, you know, and a couple other guys, but there's nobody in that system where you're like, oh, wait till this guy comes. This is going to be a game changer. And they've had 5 years to do it, and they haven't. So it's really hard to be good in this league. You can go through free agency, and you can do that. But if you don't either have young players under contract that are contributors, like both the Lightning and the Avalanche had, or assets that you can move to get relatively cheap veteran players, again, which the Avalanche and the Lightning have, you're stuck in the middle.
Yeah, and, you know, look, the bottom line is this. Like, you still have Sidney Crosby. He's still playing at an elite level. He's the cornerstone, right? Like, he's not going anywhere. So how do you make the best of the rest of his career? I think that's the central question now, right? How do you surround Sid with the best supporting cast possible to give him the best shots, you know, for the rest of his career? To me, that's what it's all about in Pittsburgh.
Right. And I think, you know, with Sidney Crosby signed for three more seasons, that's you have to, like, the Fenway Sports Group didn't buy the team to rebuild and lose. Right. I mean, they didn't do that. They know they have Sidney Crosby for three more seasons, and they know that he is a moneymaker. They have three seasons left of him, and he's playing at a very high level still. But you have to be smart here, too. And Sean, I 100% agree with you. You're not going to replace Chris Letang. You're not going to be able to get somebody like that who can be as good. So I would sign him. I would let Malkin go because I just don't think he's the same player. I watched him in the playoffs this year, and I know he's coming off of that knee injury, and he didn't have a full offseason of training, and I understand all that. But he got the puck at the blue line in one game, in the far blue line, and you saw Malkin like rev it up. It was like, oh, here we go. Here's Gino. He's going. He got to the other blue line and was done. Like, that never happened before. Malkin could go the distance and he would blow through five guys. I don't think he can do it anymore. If he can't play that type of power skating game, then I would let him go. I wouldn't give him a max deal, a huge deal or anything like that. You can go out and sign Nazem Kadri, same amount of money maybe. And Kadri's going to be a better player for you probably, and a real number two center.
It's funny that you say that, because that's, if I'm Pittsburgh and I'm, you know, it never necessarily goes the way that you want.
Right.
Yeah. That's a player I would love to have, right? Like, I would love to have Nazem Kadri as my number two center behind Sidney Crosby. Right. And he adds a different element. And, you know, like, that's a target that I would make. And if I'm Naz, like, that's a pretty, you know, intriguing alternative. If I'm not coming back to Colorado, like, depending on what the deals look like, you know? So yeah, like, that's how you're thinking if you're Pittsburgh, right? Like, you're thinking, all right, if I don't have Malkin, what are my alternatives?
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I don't have Letang, what are my alternatives? And to me, as Sean put it well. There's not a whole lot of Crystal Tangs out there. There's not necessarily a lot of Malkins, but there are centers available. There are complementary pieces available in free agency this year that if I'm Pittsburgh and other teams that I'd be interested in.
I just think it's really dangerous to sell any player short right now. Like I think you're short selling players. We forget that we, as a hockey league, went through a time that was incredibly trying physically, mentally, emotionally. Like, when's the last time that Malkin had a full off season?
I'm not interested in signing Evgeny until he's 40, 41, 42. I'm not, right? I'd love to have him on a two-year deal. So that's how I'm thinking when you're talking about free agency. But you're right. I mean, like, you got to be careful evaluating players, but I think no matter what at that age, like, you got to be careful giving term. And that's the question.
You have to eat a year or two of that deal to keep that core together, and you owe it. Like, I always feel like it's a two-way street, right? Like, I understand this is a money business. I understand that there's very little room for sentimentality. Those are three players that gave you everything they had for a decade. They're not bad players now. Like, at what point is it a two-way street, right? We talk about loyalty all the time, right? Well, that player should be loyal. The team gave him everything. They gave him the opportunity. He should be loyal. He should take less money. Like we just talked about with Nathan MacKinnon. And then we turn around and we look at ownership and we're like, well, they don't have to be loyal. It's a business.
There are hard decisions that need to be made, and nothing will ever take away the three cups and Malkin's time in Pittsburgh if he does leave. But like, you have to make hard decisions sometimes. And I do think that there's been enough opportunity for them to win and they haven't gotten it done. Like, that's just the hard truth of it, that this trio with this supporting cast has not won a playoff series since 2018.
Yeah. Here's my thinking on this, and I'll end it right here with this, and we'll move on. Malkin has been a Hall of Fame center, and the Pittsburgh Penguins have had the luxury of two Hall of Fame centers for a very long time. He is not playing like a Hall of Fame center anymore. He's still a good center, but I think there could be better options out there for the money you are going to be spending. I don't think there's better options for the money you're going to be spending on Chris Letang. It's why I go back to the start of this. I said Letang instead of Malkin, and I think you guys agree with that. It's just a matter of how you do it. And loyalty is important, Sean. But, you know, with a three-year window of Crosby signed here, you've got to do your best, put your best possible foot forward to win. I don't think Malkin is your best possible at this point. If you can, like, a Kadri would be better at this point. That's just my opinion. But you know,
here's how you likely handle it, and here's how you walk the fine line. And teams do this all the time. You set your price for Malkin. You say, like, we'll give you X years at Y dollars, and then he decides I'm going to go to another team for more. Right. Sure. So it becomes Malkin's decision to leave. That's how you play it.
That might be what's happening with Philip Forsberg in Nashville too, right? We'll transition there, because to me, two of the more interesting guys in the offseason are Forsberg as interesting, or if not more interesting as Malkin and Letang, but Forsberg and Johnny Gaudreau, right? Both pending UFAs. July 13th, by the way, we haven't even mentioned that July 13th is the signing day. That's the first day of the signing period. So that's what we're looking at. And the NHL draft is coming up first. That's next week. So we get that first. So there's a lot going on, and there could be a lot of trades there. By the way, quick plug, listen to NHL Draft Class, the podcast with Mike Morreale and Adam Kimmelman. They do a terrific job. They're all over it. Mike, by the way, has a great story on Shane Wright up on NHL.com right now. And we'll be there. Sean and I will be doing a podcast and At the Rink podcast from the draft in Montreal. And a lot will be determined there about what's going to happen on July 13th. But the Forsberg situation is interesting because David Poile has said they've offered him the 8-year deal, and they're the only team that can offer him the 8-year deal. It's not signed yet, right? So Forsberg's, you know, maybe he's thinking about it. Maybe he's saying, I want to be wined and dined. I want to know what another team is going to spend on me. And they can't give me the 8 years like the Predators can, but they can give me 7. Maybe they give me more. I don't know what the money is. We don't know what the money is that the Predators, I haven't seen it anywhere, that the Predators have offered Philip Forsberg. But the fact that he can get the max 8 years, and it's the offer has been made and not signed yet, that's very interesting to me. Tells me that Philip Forsberg is saying, I'm going to the open market and I'm seeing what I'm going to get. And Johnny Gaudreau, you know, when the Flames did their breakup day, Johnny Gaudreau said, I love it here in Calgary. And Brad Treliving said, we're going to move mountains to sign him. They haven't signed him yet. 2 weeks to go. They haven't signed him yet.
Yeah. I mean, you could have a Stamkos, right? That yeah. possibly is always out there where they look around, they say, yeah, I'm going to stay where I'm at. Right. But these guys, so the difference here is Gaudreau is 28. Forsberg's 27. Like, this is their time to cash in. They're at an age where it makes sense to give them term. And there are enough teams out there with some serious cap space that maybe could make an offer, right? That no one else could, that these teams won't be able to. So the other interesting question to me is just where the cap's at and the way revenue's going. Like, I wonder if anybody has, you know, I don't know about these two guys just because, you know, the age, but do they take a shorter term deal at high dollars and then cash in again 3 or 4 years from now when the cap's going to probably shoot up? So that's another thing to think about. But like, to me, the fact that they're not signed says it all. The closer you get to that and when you go to market, the chances that you're re-signing go way down.
I don't know how anybody leaves Nashville. That's just me. It's the perfect place to play hockey. Like, they're competitive every year. Like, David Poile will move mountains to win. He did it with Forsberg and getting him. You know, I think they're on their way back up. They got the most important pieces you can have, and a defenseman in Roman Josi and UC Saros, a Vezina finalist. Like, they certainly have the pieces to remain competitive. And then it's Nashville. Beyond that, like, who doesn't want to play there? Like, they go crazy for him. It's a good place to live. So I don't know that there's a greener pasture out there. There might be. It might be greener with green dollars.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's greener as in more comfortable, more fulfilling, more everything. So I like to think there's still a chance for Forsberg, but who knows? And I think Dan's right. I think, you know, we're all coming off of a really long playoff run and we're trying to get our breath back. But I think we land in Montreal and things are going to go absolutely haywire.
Yeah.
The only advantage to not playing in Nashville is that you get to visit Nashville as a visitor.
Look at Forsberg and Gaudreau, though, right? I mean, Philip Forsberg is a pending UFA who can go to market, and we don't know, but I'm just going to toss this out there. He might have the chance to play with Sidney Crosby for the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, you don't want to leave Nashville, Sean, and I understand it from the point of view you're talking from, but from a hockey standpoint, he might have a chance to go do that. We don't know what the Avalanche are going to do. Right. They got a lot of different guys, right? He might have a chance to go play with Nathan McKinnon, you know, or at least attempt to, right. And you know, like, there's other options too. Johnny Gaudreau might have a chance to move closer to home if he wants to, right? And be a difference maker, a significant difference maker on a team that wants to build itself up. Could it be the Flyers with Tortorella, the Devils, you know, get a chance to play with Jack Hughes? I mean, that would be, by the way, a lot of fun to watch that line if there was Johnny Gaudreau and Jack Hughes. I don't know if there's enough pucks on the ice, but, you know, we'll see. But it's interesting, and it's you get married to where you're at, and you fall in love, and we see, oh, these things are great here, this, that, and the other. And it's not always greener on the other side, but sometimes it is. And sometimes players just get enticed by what they don't have and what they think they could have. And that's what I think could happen with these two players in particular.
Yeah. I mean, in Nashville, they haven't won, right? Like, and I think that maybe wears on Forsberg a little bit. Right. Calgary, it's a little different. But I think you make a good point, Dan, in that we're always, you know, at this point, we're judging on incomplete information, right? Mm-hmm. We're from a team perspective, we're like, do you want Malkin or not? Well, you know, or you know, if you're Gaudreau or Forsberg, do you want to stay or go? But like, it's about options, right? So it's not, there's life after Evgeny Malkin in Pittsburgh, and they have plan A, B, C, D, E. If he goes, right? And I'm sure they've got some targets in mind to use that space. And if you're Gaudreau or Forsberg, it's like, all right, well, where could I go? Where could be better? What are the numbers? What's it worth to me to leave? right? And do I have a better chance to win, right? Like, I love Nashville too. Love Nashville. Predators have made the final once, right? Like, they haven't gotten over the hump. Can I get over the hump here, or do I have a better chance to win elsewhere? And maybe he does. So, you know, we'll have to see how it goes. But what's interesting about what's coming up is there's going to, guys like that are going to have options, and there are teams with cap space, and it's going to be interesting to see what options those guys have.
There's more too. So, Nick, there's still coaches that we have to get hired as well. You know, you're sitting there, you're just out there in the suburb of Detroit. You're not that far from Little Caesars Arena. You know, you, nobody on this podcast right now knows Steve Yzerman better than Nick Kotsenika. At least from the,
that's not saying much, by the
that's
way.
But it's the truth. And, you know, I got a question about this in my mailbag, which runs on Wednesday. You know, Steve Yzerman's so secretive. Who's going to coach the Red Wings? I'm like, I don't know. But if I had to take a guess, because we're all just guessing here, I think he wants to follow the same script. And why wouldn't you, that he did in Tampa, right? With John Cooper. And bring a guy in to coach your team who may not have NHL head coaching experience, but has an experience of winning as a head coach at other levels. And the Tampa Bay Lightning have that guy, and they couldn't talk to him until now. Derek Lalonde won in Iowa. He won in Toledo in the ECHL. He won with the Green Bay Gamblers in the USHL. He was hired by Steve Yzerman to be on John Cooper's staff. One of the last moves that Yzerman actually made as the GM was to hire Derek Lalonde. And now I think you're going to see that start to pick up steam. And if not, if it hasn't already, like, this is a guy that he's followed the John Cooper path, except he's also won as an assistant in the NHL.
I wouldn't discount Jeff Halpern either.
Right. Like, no head coaching experience, though.
But here's what we know. Steve is very secretive. Lots of people who should be close to Steve don't even know what he's thinking. But what Steve has said is that he feels far more comfortable with someone he's worked with in the past. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Everything that you just laid out is correct as well. So it makes a lot of sense they'd be waiting to at least speak to Lightning assistants, right? Now that the cup final is over. So I think everything you said makes a lot of sense. You know, I know that there are other voices in the organization that would prefer that they have a head coach with NHL experience, just because of the way that their team is. But I don't know that that's the way that Steve thinks, and he's going to make the decision. You know, the other thing to think about in Detroit is that they're not necessarily looking for a finisher, right? They're not close to winning the Stanley Cup. They need a developer. They need a teacher. They need someone who can take these young players and the prospects that are coming in and develop them, teach them how to be pros, like get them to the next level, right? And, you know, ideally that coach leads them all the way. But I think that that's what you're focused on right now. Who can develop this team, help this team take the next step? The wild card is that this is one of those teams with a lot of cap space. So I think they're going to make some moves this summer. They're at least going to take some swings in free agency. I think they're going to go after an Evgeny Malkin, but on a short-term deal. Whether Evgeny wants to come to Detroit on a short-term deal is a different question. I think a Forsberg would look great in Detroit, right, on a shorter-term deal. Maybe they give him term just because of his age. But I think they're going to try to do some things in free agency to improve the team, and that'll be interesting in tandem with the coach situation.
Well, the one guy we know who's not going to be the coach and isn't going to be the coach in any of the openings that are still left is Barry Trotz. And we know that because of Tim Campbell, our colleague, spoke to him, and Barry laid out, you know, why he doesn't want to coach this year, you know, why he wouldn't go to Winnipeg, which everybody thought was kind of a done deal. And, you know, you can read that story on NHL.com. It ran during the final, and it spells everything out there. And, you know, I'm sure we'll see Barry back behind a bench, but I'll tell you what, it was a pretty good scoop for Tim Campbell, who is on his way out, will no longer be our colleague. He's going to play golf. The grass will be greener, although he's in Winnipeg, so I don't know
how much
greener. But Tim Campbell calling it a career with us, and a hockey career that's unbelievable. It dates all the way back you know, to the Winnipeg Free Press and the Sun and whatever else. Just a great hockey writer and a great person, and we'll certainly miss him.
My jaw dropped when he said he's retiring because I thought he was like 55. Like, Tim looks in fabulous. He's a great guy. I'm going to miss him. And, you know, and it was great for him to get that scoop right at the end. That's a fitting farewell. But to get to Trotz, like, that was the word, was that he might not want to coach. I think he was more interested in management positions. So I don't think it's a shock. And I think he would have been a great fit in Vegas. He would have been a great fit for different reasons in Winnipeg. There were, you know, lots of teams wanted him, right? So it's telling that he's taken a step back for now. But one of the key things in that story is he's not necessarily done coaching forever. He's taken a step back for now, and then he may resurface at some point. And I'm sure if he wants to coach again, there'll be a lineup of teams interested.
Without question, as there should be. He's a terrific coach. And Sean, I echo your sentiments there about Tim. Hopefully he listens and he hears this, you know, because we are praising him, and he will absolutely be missed as he heads into retirement. It was a great scoop for him to get Barry Trotz and talk to him about that. And Barry Trotz will be a great coach again for another team at some point if he wants to do it. And it was interesting, Sean, I go back, I think it was 2 weeks ago, to go back to the Detroit thing. I think you said that, I think on our podcast 2 weeks ago, I think you said that Detroit was the best opening that you could find right now. And that was when Vegas was still open. Florida was a potential. Dallas, which has since been filled by Pete DeBoer. Florida since been filled by Paul Maurice. Andrew Brunette was the interim coach, not there anymore. You went and said Detroit. And just to bring it back a little bit to what Nick was saying, and I think your point was that it's not a job for if it's not, you're not finishing, you're there for the build and you're there for the whole thing. And it really allows you to sink your teeth into, so you're not taking over somebody else's work necessarily. Although Jeff Blashill was there for a long time, you're not necessarily taking over somebody's work. You're stepping in a situation where you can take that team to the next level with, like Nick said, a ton of cap space. So now looking at it, I was talking about it 2 weeks ago saying they're not ready to win a Stanley Cup. The teams like Vegas are, and you know, Florida are. That's why those jobs are great. I think this Detroit job is a real winner of a job. You don't think so, Nick? He's shaking his head. I think the Detroit job could be a real winner of a job because honestly, Nick, I think we're going to be covering a lot of playoff series in your town here in the next, in the next decade.
I would love for you to be right. I don't think you are.
And, I don't think it is.
I would love for you to be right because I would love to cover playoff series at home, right? And like, I'm not ripping the Red Wings here. I'm trying to be a realist. Like, let's start with the division. All right. So you've got Tampa, which we just went over, Florida, Toronto, right? They're not going anywhere anytime soon, right? So now you get a battle with a Buffalo team that's getting better, Ottawa, right? Like, Boston's still in the mix. Like, it's a tough division, A. B, they don't have enough players. They just don't. And like, we'll see in a month what they're able to do in free agency. But even with Raymond, even with Seider, even with some of these young guys coming, like, they still have a long way to go. Like, they have a long build in front of them. And I don't think they're close. Like, if I'm a coach, like, I'd much rather go to Florida. I'd much rather go to Vegas right now. Like, one of those established coaches, right? I do, like, you know, think it's interesting. Like, I'd love to talk about Maurice in Florida. Like, this, it's interesting. I love Paul Maurice. Love him, right? What writer doesn't? And I love that roster in Florida. I'm not sure it's the right fit. Like, I'm just not. Like, he's a player's coach. I'm not sure that that's what they need. I'll be wrong and they'll be great. Like, and you know, again, like I said, I love Paul, but like, those are the situations that I find more intriguing. You know, Cassidy in Vegas, I think, could be a very good fit. I think he's in a lot of ways exactly what they need, from persona to special teams. Like, I think he fits what they were lacking. Paul in Florida, it's going to be interesting. In DeBoer in Dallas, same thing.
I look at Detroit and I think about the Stanley Cup celebration and that team having 48 points and just being at the nadir and thinking it would never come right. Like, that's where Detroit is. You bring in a young coach, you talked about Lalonde, you talked about all that, and you build it up and you build around the core pieces that are just coming of age now. And look, you're going to need to add something. you're going to need to add, but you know who you're working with. You know that that guy is going to follow the model that has gotten him to the mountaintop as a player and as a GM. Like I see the similarities as really striking, and that's why the job's appealing to me. It's not appealing to me next year. You're going to get your teeth kicked in again next year, but so did Bednar. Like he had the one good year and then they wandered a bit and, you know, they stayed with him. Like there's going to be some pain there. But I think coaches are built to endure pain. They all do. 31 of them endure horrible ends to their seasons. They're used to being disappointed. And if you don't have that, you can't be an NHL coach. So I just think that all the pieces are there for that to be a really attractive job, especially to a young coach who knows that it may not be his only stop. It may be his introduction to coaching, and it may be his chance to put together a sizzle reel for later down the road.
Sean, if the Red Wings win the Stanley Cup in 5 years, write this down. I will buy you 5 cases of whatever IPA that you want from anywhere in the world.
Bell's too hearted. You know that, Nikki.
It's not the same. Like if you look at the Avalanche, and I think it's a little like it's deceiving, right? When they had the 48-point season, they already had Nate MacKinnon, right? They already had Mikko Rantanen. They already had Gabriel Landeskog. Right, like three pretty huge pieces. And then, of course, we know they lost in the lottery and got Cale Makar, which really put them over the top. Like Detroit doesn't have that. They do have Moritz Seider, right? And we think the world of him, and we think he can be a number one. They have Lucas Raymond, who had a very good rookie season. They don't have a number one center. They don't have a Nate MacKinnon, right? Like they still lack lots of pieces. You know, I just don't see it. Like I think they're earlier in their development. Like they're the Avalanche when like they had that bad season, what was it, 13? Like earlier. Like I just think they're earlier in their rebuild. You look at Eijerman in Tampa, right? What he built in Tampa, when he took that job, he had Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman already, right? And it took them a decade to become real cup contenders. So I just think they're farther away, and I would love to be wrong.
Yeah, but like you said, you have to look at the division and where you are, and as they continue to build, where's that division going to go? Tampa's good now, and I think they stay good, right? Florida's good now, and I think they stay good. And by the way, I like Paul Maurice in Florida. Yeah. I'll explain why. I answered a mailbag question about this. I think he is the type of coach. He's going to be the coach. They're not going to mess with the offense, right? You don't mess with the offense, but what you need to be able to do is to teach that team how to play, how to build yourself to become a playoff team. They were a terrific regular season team, and they were not a playoff team. And they kind of got intimidated at, you know, they beat a Washington team that was undermanned and they barely did so. I know they won in six, but it was tough. They had to come back and win three of those games, right? They got to Tampa and everybody was talking about how well they played them in the playoffs last year and they played them tough. So they're going to be better. And they got intimidated by them for three games. They were no shows. When they finally showed up, Vasilevsky said, forget about it, boys, this is over, right? They tried to make cross ice passes and they tried to do all these things that they were doing in the regular season and it doesn't work. Paul Maurice is a veteran coach. He's taken teams to the playoffs. I think he's going to less so much about the physical. It's going to be more of understanding the IQ of the game and where the game goes and how you build yourself to being a playoff team and how you don't have to have 122 points in the regular season. That's nice. But you got to, I think a veteran coach pushes them in that direction and can get push the right buttons too. And I think he's been doing that for a very long time and honest about his ways too. He is a player's coach, but we don't know what goes on behind those closed doors and how hard he is and how much he pushes guys and things along those lines. So I think as a veteran coach, he's a guy that's not going to stifle their offense, but he is ideally going to be able to bring out the other parts of their game that were no shows when it mattered most.
Why do you think that though? Like, and here I'm playing devil's advocate because I love Paul. Like, I love him. But like, he's lost in the final. He's been to two conference finals, but in a long track record, he's missed the playoffs a lot. He's been out in the playoffs early a lot. The criticism of him in Winnipeg is he helped some individuals have great individual seasons, mm-hmm. but he didn't make them a better team.
He hasn't
struggled as a team, and he's not known as like this great structure coach, right? So that's my question. Like, and you know, again, as a guy who loves the guy, like, is it the right fit? I don't know.
To me, he's taking over a team that's ready made, ready to go, just needs some finer points of their game. And I think he can deliver those finer points of the game. He doesn't have to coach up individuals in Florida, right? Those guys have been coached up. Those guys know what they can do.
But that's his strength.
I understand that, but but maybe it's his strength because it's what he's had to do, right?
Yeah, my point is he's taken over a team that doesn't need that.
Right.
He's taken over a team that needs finishing, that needs individuals to come together as a team. And I don't know. Like, we'll see if he can do that.
I think it gives him a little bit more defensive structure. My concern would be the fact that he believed that his message went stale in Winnipeg. Like, how do you, as a coach, arrive to that point? Like, you need to change, right? If your message is stale, you change your message. And maybe this time off helped him realize that and learn some different ways. But going through that interview process, that would be my concern, would be like, how did you become stale and how come you couldn't fix it? And fixing it was to walk away.
That's a good point. I do think, though, he'd been there a long time. The roster hadn't turned over, you know, maybe as much as some other places. And I think he had the recognition that happened, right? I think it happens to lots of good coaches, right? Like, that doesn't concern me as much. And like, if you know Paul, you know he interviews really well. Like, not just with the media, but what, like, he's an impressive guy. He's a great communicator. And those are his strengths. Like, he's going to be like, I expect them to have an outstanding season next year. But that's not the question about the Florida Panthers. It's, can they win in the playoffs? Can they be a team in the playoffs? Can they get through the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? Like, that's the question. And that's really what he's there for. So, and it's not, you know, usually there's the yin and yang, right? Like, you get the hard mode coach and then the players coach takes over next, or vice versa. It's not really what happened here. Like, they had Andrew Burnett, right? And what were their problems, right? Like, the power play was a big problem. You know, maybe he can help that. He's got some fresh ideas. I don't know. But you know, the other problem is getting through a champion, right? And that's going to be their task again, more than likely.
Right. And that champion is still there. Back to my original, that champion is still there. The Toronto Maple Leafs are in the same position as the Florida Panthers, right? They're the exact same. They have to be able to get through it. And they haven't won a round. At least Florida did win a round. Going back to when we were talking about Detroit, you know, Buffalo's on the rise. We know that. But are they that? They're a little bit further ahead than Detroit. We'll see how much further ahead. Ottawa's on the rise. Are they that much further ahead than Detroit? I don't know. Maybe they're a little bit ahead, right? But it's not, you know, we're not talking about, you know, a huge swath of difference there. Montreal is definitely not. They're behind Detroit at this point, right? And then there's Boston. And Boston, to me, is a team that's, they're look, it's hard for me to say because they've been there for so long, but they're on the decline. Right? They're getting older. We don't know who their coach is going to be. What's the future of Patrice Bergeron? What's the future of their D? Marchand's out until January or so. McAvoy's out for a while. Like, that's not necessarily impacting the Detroit Red Wings for next year. But as you go through, Tampa's there. Florida should be good for a while. Toronto should be good for a while. And you're really competing against Buffalo, Boston. You're competing against those other teams. And that's the race to get into the playoffs. Right there. That's the race. And it's not just for next season. It's for a few beyond. And I think that's why, you know, if you give me Steve Eiserman as the GM, you give me a lot of cap space and a coach who's hungry and has a track record of success of winning, I think they can get there as fast, if not faster, than some of those other teams.
All right, just make one last Detroit point. If I'm Eiserman, I go to Patrice Bergeron and say, come to Detroit for 2 years at lots of money. And I don't know whether Patrice would do that. Like, why would he do that? But you never know. The relationship, they have a relationship, right? Like, that's what Detroit needs. They need a center, A.
Yeah.
B, they need a mentor for these young kids, somebody who can teach them how to be a champion, right? Like, that's the kind of move that if I'm Steve, I try to make, right? Like, try to find a guy like that on a high-paying short-term deal, try to entice him with that. You know, whether Bergeron would do that, I don't know, right? But like, if I'm from a Detroit perspective, that's what I'm looking to do. I think Steve knows very well the challenge that he has. What he needs to do is make this team better in the short term with some veterans, right? And then keep drafting and drafting and hope to hit in the draft and be down the road where the Avalanche are now, right? With some homegrown core pieces that develop over time.
Dude, you just detonated my brain. I'm done now. Patrice Bergeron in the wing wheel, like, and not in the spoked V. Like, I can't. Yeah. I can't even process it.
There's a long history of that.
Unbelievable. I know. Look, he could do anything, but it's just hard to comprehend that he would ever.
Me too. I agree.
Play for anyone other than Boston. And I know it happens all the time. It happened in Boston. It happened with Tom Brady. Like, you could never be like, oh, I could see Tom Brady playing for another team. No way. Like,
Bobby Orr.
Well, but that wasn't Bobby Orr's choice.
Well, I understand that. Yeah.
But I'm talking about players saying, I no longer want to be associated with this team. Like, I don't know that Patrice could do that, but of course he could. I have a hard time believing it. He is Mr. Bruin. Like, he's part, to me, he's entered into that Bobby Orr, Cam Neely, Ray Bourque kind of trilogy of people that will always be a Boston Bruin.
I agree.
Some of them weren't always a Boston Bruin, but he'll be one of those guys. Like, he's become the Bruin of his generation.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Well, Sean, I mean, your brain is detonated. It's interesting to me. I always thought it was.
Patrice Bergeron in a Detroit sweater hastened it along.
There you go. All right. Well, Daniel Alfredson went into a Detroit sweater after being in an Ottawa Senator sweater for a very long time. And you know where he's going now? He's going to the Hall of Fame, along with Henrik Sedin and Daniel Sedin and Roberto Luongo, who was in a Canucks sweater for a long time, a Panther sweater, Canucks sweater, Riikka Salonen and Herb Carnegie. The Hall of Fame announced their class of 2022 Monday, and Luongo and the Sedins go in their first year, so it gives it a Vancouver feel to it. I thought it was real interesting that, you know, how they spoke about each other on the Hall of Fame call yesterday, Monday, with Sedin saying that Roberto was one of their best teammates and Roberto saying how much he loved them. So how great it is for them to be going in together. It also has a Swedish feel with Alfredson getting in. The Ottawa community pushed and pushed and pushed, and he's in too. And Riikka Salonen, who I found was interesting, they couldn't even get a hold of her. So she wasn't on the Hall of Fame call, but she is going in. She's the first female Finnish player in the Hockey Hall of Fame. And Herb Carnegie, which many, many people believe is a very long time coming for him. And he goes in posthumously as a builder into the Hall of Fame, the class of 2022. I'm just curious, you know, that they'll be inducted November 14th. Nick, thoughts on this Hall of Fame class?
Well, the lead thought is the Sedins going together.
Yeah.
Right.
They do everything together.
Right. Like, they do everything together. I think that's a fantastic thing. And, you know, like, it's a great class. You know, the thing that we always talk about at these times is who didn't get in, but I think they're all deserving. Alfie's the one that I was kind of wasn't sure he'd be first ballot Hall of Famer. But I think he's certainly a deserving Hall of Famer. And I think it's great that he goes in with Sedin's.
Yeah. And when we talk about it, like, I think the thing that people forget is it's not the NHL Hall of Fame. Like, there's a lot of really good NHL players who haven't gotten in. It's the Hockey Hall of Fame, right? And when you look at the international resumes for all of these players that got in, like, to me, that's what pushes them over the top, right? Like, they were all great NHL players, but then you look at what they did internationally from World Juniors right on through. Like, you're talking about icons of their countries, right? And that's, you know, I think sometimes in those, oh, he should be in and he shouldn't be in, we forget about that. The numbers, the NHL numbers are always thrown around. He scored 52 more goals in the NHL than that guy did. Why isn't he in? Yeah, well, what'd the other guy do in the Olympics, in the World Championships, in the World Juniors? And the resumes of this class internationally, they're astounding.
Agreed.
So two things to that. I found it interesting. So the four players that we know from the NHL players all have won Olympic gold medals, right? Roberto Luongo won two, and the Sedins and Alfredsson were part of the 2006 Swedish team. None of them won a Stanley Cup. I don't know. I have to, I mean, I would just kind of came to my head. I'd have to go back and look. Has there ever been a Hall of Fame class? I can't imagine there has, where there's not one Stanley Cup champion among the group of inductees.
Yeah, someone pointed this out. I think it's the first time four have gone in and not had a champion. There have been other, you know, it's interesting. I think Sean makes a fantastic point about the international resumes, right? Like, and the Olympic gold matters, right? Like, huge, right? And then, you know, there's a, like, Luongo is a really interesting case too, because he's a compiler as well, right? Like, 489 wins, right? Fourth all time. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, that's nothing to sneeze at. Right. So Lou, you know, and he was on that great Vancouver team that was a game away from winning the Stanley Cup. Right. So he's another guy I kind of expected to make it just on the virtue of his numbers. Right. And the gold. But I wasn't sure it'd be first ballot. Right. Like, so, and he was first ballot. Right.
Yeah.
So, but again, deserving. Right. So there are different criteria. Sometimes I'm just being frank. I think the bar for the Hockey Hall of Fame is a little lower than I'd like it to be, but it is what it is. Right. And I think they're all deserving. I don't know my women's hockey history as well, but, like, you know, from what I understand, like, it's great to see a non-North American woman get in. Right. Like, yeah. And she's very deserving. So, yeah, I think it's a great class, and, you know, who doesn't love Roberto Luongo? Like, who doesn't love these guys, right? All of them, right? Just as people. So it's going to be a great ceremony. There's going to be a lot of great stories because they're all wonderful people, at least the four NHL players that I know well.
Yeah, and they're all intertwined. Their careers happen together. They've competed against each other. They're all great storytellers. And again, like, people are like, oh, well, they're popular. That's why they got in. Like, they have a good relationship with the voting public. No, part of being a Hall of Famer is growing the game. Like, part of your responsibility as a hockey player is to make people like hockey. You don't exist if people don't like what you do. If people didn't like this podcast, and I hope they do, and it's not just Bob Bender putting it on each week to nobody, the reason that we get to do this is because people like it, and we promote it, and we do what we need to do to make it happen. And part of your job as a hockey player is to promote your game, to promote yourself, to promote your team, to do all those things. And that counts. Like, that's part of being a Hall of Famer. It's not the only criteria. Look, there's guys in the Hall of Fame who were not good promoters, who were not good talkers, who were not very popular. But there's players that are in the Hall of Fame that a huge part of their legacy is what they did in their markets, right? And what the Sedins and Luongo did in Vancouver is almost unmatched. What Daniel Alfredsson did in Ottawa is unmatched. It is unmatched.
Yeah.
And that's as big as his numbers. It has to be, because they're parts of the community. They're parts of the hockey community. They're parts of the real community. So when people are like, oh, they're popular, that's why they got in. Yeah, it is why they got in. And I have no issue with it at all.
Well, and, you know, you talk about building the, you know, making the game popular. What I found very, very interesting on the Hall of Fame call, and this is my last thought on this, is one of the writers on the call asked, I can't remember who it was, I apologize, asked the players, the Sedins, Alfredsson, and Luongo, if they know about Herb Carnegie. And I think it was Daniel Sedin said, I don't, but I'm sure going to learn about it. He's a guy who made the game popular, from what I've heard, from everybody that he talked through the years and years and years as a builder, after, you know, racism basically kept him out of the NHL. And that's also one thing that I find with this Hall of Fame, when this comes around every year, is, you know, if there is somebody like that that gets in, I learn more. And I think that's what the player, you know, these guys are going to learn more too about Herb Carnegie and who he is and what he was able to do. And our Bill Douglas actually sent me a recording of an interview he did with Bernice Carnegie, who was Herb Carnegie's daughter. And she was in tears. She was crying. And then she actually said to Bill, you know, I was just so happy I could cry. And Bill goes, you are crying right now. Literally, you are crying right now. So it matters. And that, so, you know, as part of this, That guy taught a lot of people the game of hockey. He impacted a great number of people, and we're all going to learn more about him too.
Yeah, and that's great. And that's a part of it. And before we go, and thank you to Nick for joining us, and I'll give him the last word in a minute, but I have one more shout out I need to make, and that's to the Chicago Wolves, so the AHL. While we were busy gallivanting across the country watching the Stanley Cup final be contested, the AHL contested the Calder Cup, which is a great trophy and a great championship to win. One that, by the way, Jared Bednar won before he won the Stanley Cup. He also won the ECHL. He's the only coach to ever do that. But the Chicago Wolves won the Calder Cup. They beat the Springfield Thunderbirds, who had been in the AHL wasteland forever and finally got out and made it to a final. And it's great for that great hockey city. But Carolina has had the back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. They were the Charlotte Checkers the last time it was contested pre-COVID. And the players from that team are littered all over the NHL now. Surprisingly, there's not many of them on the Carolina Hurricanes, but they're everywhere else. And now they've won again as in Chicago. Congratulations to them on what is an unbelievable achievement.
You can't win in the NHL though. So they are very good. Maybe next year's their year. We'll see. No, this was great. And look, Nick, thank you so much for joining us for the whole show. And next week we will be at the NHL draft. All three of us will be there, and we'll try to bring you a podcast from there. Of course, listen to NHL Draft Class with Mike Morial and Adam Kimmelman as we gear up for that. And it's not just going to be players getting picked and dreams coming true. It's going to be a lot of moves going around. So I'll say this for the first time: enjoy the offseason.